Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the spot where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, brains. There's only one requirement to hang out on the edge, is that you open your big brain and close your small mind. Did you bring your thinking caps? It's time to put them on, because the conversation starts now. So, brains, welcome back to On the Edge with April Mahoney. This is the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. And look who we have here today, Maggie Richardson from Australia. She's originally a Kiwi, and she's a poet, she's a singer, she's an author, and she has a very interesting job that she is going to share with us and talk to us about. She gave tours in underground sewer lines to kids, of all things. We're going to talk about that and a whole lot more. Brains, please help me welcome Maggie to On the Edge. How are you, Maggie?
Oh, not too bad. We'll get it right in a minute. Yeah.
We're going to get it right. We're going to take our time until we get it right. So tell us a little bit about your story and your history and your writing.
I was born in New Zealand, and I was the eldest of four children. I wrote my first story when I was just little. It was a story about my cat, Whiskers. I haven't got it now, of course, you know. But I went to school in Matamata, that's in the Waikato area of New Zealand. And while I was there, I joined Precision Marching Team. And I also met my first boyfriend, who was just as keen on dancing as I was. My father spent most of his formative years in Australia, but it took him till I was 17 to be able to convince Mum to move over there. But part of it was because the building industry was going flat. He was a plasterer, and so we sold our place in Matamata, moved to Rotorua, and then from there we went to Australia. So I've always had a feeling that nobody would want to marry me, because I was very independent and had my own way of doing things. Anyway, when I was at camp, when I was 12, this young boy came up to me and he wanted to marry me. He proposed to me. It was beautiful, but I didn't like him at all. And I said, "Damn, stupid, you'd have to buy me a ring."
Right? Oh, wow.
And the next day he turned up with a bloody ring. So I was glad the camp was finishing. But it was in Adelaide that I met my first husband, and we were together for 20 years, and we had three wonderful children. And now I have eight grandchildren and five great-grandchildren.
Wow.
But while I was in that marriage, I went back to school and completed my matriculation. And I was working as a tour guide at the local sewage treatment works. And that's what she wants to know about. So I was doing some sales work. And one of my customers said to me, "Could you do with a bit of extra work?" And I thought, well, yeah, I'm not getting much on sales at the moment. So it was going to be a split shift cleaning. And I had to go like at 6 o'clock in the morning and for a couple of hours, and then at 4 o'clock in the afternoon for a couple of hours. And I did that cleaning job for about 3 weeks while somebody was on holiday. And then they asked me if I would take over from one of the tea ladies that was going on holidays. I said, why not? No. And so I did that for 2 weeks. And then the other tea lady got sick and she went to hospital for 3 days. So I went to take over from her for 3 days, but ended up staying there 3 months because she was really sick.
Oh, wow.
And when that was over, I think they sort of got used to having me around by the time, being cheeky and all that sort of thing. I was writing poems and putting them on the walls. Anyway, one of the head engineer there said, "Well, we've got this job, but we were sort of looking for a man to take the job because it's actually walking the people around the sewage treatment works. Do you think you could do it?" I go, "Yeah, I think so." Right? one busload of kids. I said, that's all right, as long as they stay on the bus, because our theatre is being redone. So the bus pulls up, the kids pile up, they're running all over the lawns, and I'm racing out there saying, where's the bus going? And they said, oh, we're going to get the other busload. And I go, what do you mean two busloads? I said, I let you come in here on condition that I can talk to them on the bus. So, you know, I talked to them out on the lawn and then sent them on home. So they didn't really see much. But it was an
But, you know, for a woman to have that type of job, number one, it's can be smelly. But also, the types of things and the types of debris that are in the sewer that are so contaminating to the water and just been, and some of the other things that are recycled through that.
Like, the thing that's most poisonous to a sewage treatment works is milk. And there was a time when there was a milk glut and it put down through the sewers, but they had to bypass it away from the sewage treatment works. But I have to laugh at what you just said. It's for a woman, because I used to get the guy who taught the plumbing teachers, got them together and bought one from every state. And they were, we were walking around, and this one guy is watching me and smiling. You can see he had a question, you know, you can tell somebody's got a question. And in the end, I said, okay, what's your question? And he said, how come a woman's doing this job? Mm. And I said, who else is better qualified? We handle the dirty stuff all the time.
All the time. But
it was interesting because all the pipes were color-coded. And they made their own power there that ran the plant from the gas that was made from the...
Now, methane gas is made from that sewage, correct?
Yes, that's right.
Right.
Any sewage, yeah. And the methane gas, the engines in the powerhouse will run on 90% methane and 10% diesel.
Oh, wow.
Right, and they created all the power that was needed for that whole plant and all the laboratories that used to test the water and everything like that.
Is there a lot of personal hazard to a job like that?
No, they're pretty good at watching you, you know, where you are. They're safety conscious. So I wasn't going to be swimming in the sewage or anything.
Right.
That first grill where the water comes through and catches things, the boys told me that sometimes they'd catch false teeth there.
Oh, my gosh.
Right, that would come through. And they said one night, one guy rang up and he said, I need to get my wife's teeth back. She won't get out of bed until she gets her teeth back.
Well, you know, after they had been going through a sewer plant, I don't think I would want those teeth back. I'd rather probably be with no teeth. So you moved beyond that. And, you know, you started to write and you started to sing. Tell me a little bit more about your poetry and your books.
Well, I moved from with my second husband then, out to the farm in Coonabarabran, which is up near Dubbo in New South Wales. So I've come from South Australia to New South Wales. And we had this farm that had, you know, like three pigs and produced against three cows. It was a big farm, yeah. but my husband was a builder, so he went out and did building work. So I've written lots of stories about things that happened there. But I also had a children's wear shop with a friend in town, because what I did is our premier at the time, Neville Rand, wanted to promote women's art. And because I was part of it, so much of a story, Mickey. I was part of the Jiffy Bag Poets that started in Gunnedah. And that was basically people who wrote poetry who lived in that kind of general area. Mm-hmm. When I say general, it's like it's an hour drive that way, a few hour drive that way. It's not a small area. But they got them together and formed this group called the Jiffy Bag Poets. And we would put a poet, you know the jiffy bags you send in the mail?
Yes.
You would put a poem in there and you would send it off to the next person who would put their poem in and so on. And when it came back to me, I'd take out my poem and put another one in and send it on. So it was rotating and circulating the whole time. That's why we were called the Jiffy Bag Poets. Anyway, because of that, I ended up running a festival in Kudabarabran called the Women in Arts Festival. And I had a lot of women coming in teams to spin, just coming on stage, like performing poets. And the English teacher from the Benaway School came up to me and he said, "That is really, really good." He said, "I brought my niece to listen to poetry and I thought she'll only want to be there for a little while and then she'll want to go on and do something else." But he couldn't get her out of there.
Wow.
He just wanted to know more. Because it's not an experience that you get every day. It's to sit and listen to poets reading their poetry.
So you did a poetry gig last night. Tell me a little bit about that.
That one there. Across the road, I live in one of those little villages, over 50 villages. And across the road, they have a music night. And it's only 2 hours. And they usually have some of the older ladies playing the music. They have a doctor who comes who plays guitar and so on. And they have a karaoke night. And I thought, okay, I'll do a poetry night for them. I called it Music of the Soul, Music of the Written Word. And I had a lot of my poetry, but I had some of Spike Milligan's. I had Bad Joe Patterson and Dorothea McKellar. There was one, and I had on the internet. I can't even think what it's called. Where they have music on the internet, and they have music. They had the music of the 2020 America's Got Talent winner.
Oh, wow.
Who won the prize because he did some poetry. So he beat all the singers and all the musicians and all the beautiful black fella. He was just gorgeous. Just look it up. It's so good to watch him. But it was slam poetry. And because I don't do slam poetry, I'm not that good. But I had an example of it. So I had an example of limericks and I had an example of bush poetry and stuff like that. To give me, I had a war poem. But this one was, I put it up on the screen and just let him watch it and watch him do his performance.
Oh, wow.
So that was
quite an affair. So you had quite a turnout. There was a lot of people there, right?
There was more than I expected, actually.
Yeah?
But it wasn't a full house, but it was really good. And then at the end, I got my girlfriend to sing, this is awful, isn't it? My brain's just gone now. Judy Garland singing Over the Rainbow.
Oh, wow.
And because she's got a higher voice than me. And I said, okay, now we're looking at, I wanted her to sing that. And then they said, now what we're looking at is some words, some music. But what would happen if I changed the music? The words stay the same, but the music shifts. And there's a singer called Billy Thorpe, who had a version of Over the Rainbow. That was a quick thing, whatever. And so I sang the Billy Thorpe version. And then together we sang Love Conquers Everything. And when I go over to sing the karaoke, the first time they had karaoke, I got up and sang Just a Gigolo. I don't know if you know it. Just a gigolo and everywhere I go, people know the part I'm playing. And the boys always wanted, and they see me from that day about 4 years ago, every time I walk in that hall, one of the guys says, "Sing us a song, Maggie, sing us a song. Just gigolo."
Oh, wow. So you're
in down the street. And you're one night I tried not singing it. And at the door I said, "You didn't sing our song for us."
Right. Well, we want to talk a little bit about your books, actually. Can you put your books up so that we can see?
Okay.
And hold it up. Yeah, hold it up so people can kind of take a look at it. That is, let me read. It says, the sky is not the limit. I can't read the, it's kind of light for me at the bottom, so I can't see the bottom. So that was one of your first books. How many books have you written, Maggie?
Oh, my goodness. I wrote a little poetry book in 92. I wrote a Starting a Business in Australia in 2000. I wrote the follow-up one, Starting and Surviving in Business in Australia in 2006. And this one came out in 2015. And then we did an update because Ross had won the Australia Order of Merit for his work for the community. So 49 people in Australia that got the medal, and he was one of them. He is such a magic man.
Wow.
He runs a health clinic, has run it for years, never, ever advertised. He's got three generations of people that come to him for help. He's a spiritual minister. He learned every kind of dance that you could think of, including some Bolivian thing. And I had documented all of this stuff. There's all sorts of stuff in here where I was talking about he wanted to go deep sea fishing because he loved fishing, but he got seasick.
Oh, wow. That's an oxymoron. You go out for the fish and then you get caught in the trap. I get it. So now what you are doing currently is that you're writing and you're singing and you're producing a lot of these songs. You also said that one of your books has also been sent to a screenwriter.
I wrote a film script for it. While COVID was on, I had to republish this one because of the update. And then while I had it in spare time, I grabbed a whole lot of poems and put them together to have this one, which is called Whispering of the Soul. And I'll read you a poem from that. And while I had nothing else to do, I had to stay inside, didn't I?
Right.
I wrote the film script for this.
So tell me a little bit about what the poem is that you're going to read for us real quick.
It's called The Butterfly.
Oh, okay.
And it's a true life story. As I was saying last night when I was talking to people, I gave them the backstory behind the poem. But this one is a true story. I was at Yamba walking along. A butterfly landed on my hand today and rested momentarily, clawing into my fingers and my heart. And then he was gone. He made me think of you and the brief moment you made me feel so special.
Oh, that is beautiful. That is so sweet and simplistic and just really, really touches the heart. So Maggie, tell my brains how to get in contact with you if they want to purchase a copy, if they're there in Australia and they want to come out and listen to you live. How do they get in contact?
I don't know about them listening to me live. That was last night. I have an email address. I'll give it to you. Maggie@maggierichardson.net.
Okay.
And maggierichardson.net is the domain name for my website.
Okay.
Okay. And I'll give you my phone number.
Don't give the phone number.
Okay. I won't give you my phone number. But if you email
Because you'll have people calling you. They'll be calling you and, you know, you're a beautiful woman and have all these strange men calling you and all that kind of stuff. But Maggie, you have been such a wealth of information. You are so fun and so engaging. And I'm so glad, that you are a woman that is still full of life and full of zest and writing beautiful poetry, because I'm a poet and I know what that does to people's heart and people's spirit. Brain, I need you to go in and take a look. All of your books, are they on Amazon, Maggie?
Yes, they are. No, just these two. The business books are out of print now.
Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to put the link up so that you can go in and get a copy of that. And we want you to really enthrall yourself in Maggie's wonderful stories. She's a great storyteller. And thank you so much for being here with me on The Edge. I really appreciate you.
You're welcome.
Okay.
You're very welcome.
Bye, brains.
Bye.